the first single off the CD. Have a great Friday. Thanks for listening to me talk for so long. All right, up next, music for human beings. Thanks for staying with me for the program, and now it is time to begin Music for Human Beings. Anytime now. There we go.
Yes, marhaban. Marhaban to all of you. I am a doctor, Jalis al-Sakran. And I say marhaban to you. How glorious this Friday evening is as I sit here facing my frequent co-guest host, speech specialist Aurora.
It is so wonderful to be back. I love this frequency, this resonance once a week, to be here with you and with all the listeners, making peace in a circle. I welcome all those who are listening.
I also would like to welcome the listeners with welcomeness. So, Aurora, you mentioned frequency. There are so many frequencies in life, but can we really call Music for Human a frequency? Because yes, once a week we sit here, you and I, but it's different every week.
It is different every week. And if you look at the overtones, perhaps you will see that difference. But in the base existence of Music for Humans, you will see the frequency that exists. Just like a person whose voice may waver some days, may be scratchy some days, but every day that voice is there. And when the voice is missing, you feel its keen loss of presence. And the reason that you feel this emptiness is because of that bass frequency. And so, listeners, I hope that your frequencies are jiving with ours, so that no loss may be felt.
So many things can affect frequencies. So many frequencies are natural and pleasant things, but so many of them are disturbing. I'm not sure why that is. Also, there are many organs that are equipped to deal with various frequencies, but some, like sound, from 20 cycles per second to 20,000 cycles per second, others like light at much higher frequencies, and others like pressure at much lower frequencies. But there are so many frequencies that are there, yet which no organ is equipped to sense.
Yes, and it's one reason why frequency or vibrational meditation is so amazing and it's so enlightening, because there are so many impulses which are not felt by a person, by our senses, by our physical senses, and so we must reach out on the metaphysical plane and reach out to those vibrations and to envelop ourselves in those frequencies and feel our souls truly vibrate and resonate with all of those things that we can't really physically feel or taste or touch or hear or see.
I realize that many modern medical technologies rely on the fact that all things have a natural frequency. So by appropriately vibrating magnetic fields, one is able to cause the various soft tissues in the body to vibrate and resonate and to establish maps of internal structures.
Well, I don't know anything about that, Dr. Jollis, but it would be interesting to attempt a vibrational meditation while undergoing such medical practices to see perhaps if those vibrations are harmful or beneficent.
Indeed. But it occurs to me that we can regard ourselves as constantly vibrating beings that consume various substances also, which have their own natural frequencies. And I recently have embarked on a study of the things that we consume, particularly sugars.
Sugars can definitely be a delightful frequency to one's taste buds, and perhaps less so to one's internal organs.
Indeed, indeed. And it seems to vary quite a lot, actually, from one sugar to another. We have the lactose and the glucose, and then the fructose, and
dextrose,
which is also glucose, and various other substances which the body treats like sugar, these simply sources of energy, really, like ethanol.
So ethanol is a sugar?
Not a sugar. Ethanol is grain alcohol. But ethanol is a source of energy. You see those characters who consume great quantities of ethanol inevitably will develop large, portly frames. And the reason for this is that they are consuming a great quantity of energy, which ultimately is converted to fat. But in the process, it has a damaging effect on certain other organs. It is as though we were not really evolved to deal with energy in that form.
Perhaps some of this energy can be accessed through some New Age practices, some meditations, and reaching out onto the metaphysical planes and accessing one's energy in that sense.
Yeah, I think it's a possibility. I think a lot of the spiritual gains from ethanol can be had from simply knowing when to stop. I know that's a boring message, not a very interesting message, but the acute effects of ethanol, the becoming intoxicated or violently ill, I think that there are not many lessons to be learned.
Well, it's a poison like many artificial substances which we consume that are not found in nature. As you know, I'm very much opposed to ingesting or absorbing smog or charcoal or diamonds. Objects which are either man-made or not naturally consumed by a human being in nature. I believe it dampens the spirit.
I think so much. There are so many substances which are natural that are also poisons.
That is true. But if one reaches out with their mind and realizes what these substances are, they can be avoided. Chewing the red berries, the ones that glow so strongly, sending out a message, I am poison, beware. Nature gives us all these clues. The creature which is barbed with a long tail, perhaps with a spiky end, dripping with poison. Do not naturally reach out and decide, oh yes, this would be delicious.
Or if we were to reach out, we would quickly learn. And the lesson, if it were a great lesson, would be one that our lack of progeny would cause to eventually become instinctual. And if it were a small lesson, would be one that we would learn for the rest of our lives.
Well, and it's this beautiful idea, the oneness of humanity, that those parts of us which fail ultimately just lead to the enhancement of the rest of the society, of the one, of the singular. And in the end, perhaps the age of Aquarius, we may reach enlightenment, and we may understand truly the things which bring each other harm, the ideas which can bring us together in great harmony.
Yes, our harmonious together bringing. And those are so important. I was alarmed recently, actually, to learn by listening to a lecture on the various pathways by which these sugars were absorbed, that certainly ethanol is similar to a poison, but really the real poison we are consuming is fruit sugar.
Fructose. And yet it is so wholesome within the fruit. Why would it be so unwholesome?
But it really does have these damaging effects.
When consumed in fruit form?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, in fact, like ethanol, the wandering person who was to consume ethanol from a grape that had been sitting on the vine perhaps for too long, it's unlikely that he would become intoxicated because of the small quantity of these fruits that were available. And even if he were to become intoxicated once or twice, it is unlikely that a wandering ape would become an alcoholic.
But what about these wonderful antioxidants?
Well, this is my point. The antioxidants, the other beneficial aspects, would be taken from, you know, consuming these otherwise poisons in moderation. And the fructose, wherever it appears in nature, is in a form that is either too difficult to consume or packaged with other things that would eventually slow consumption. And in particular, I'm speaking of fiber.
With slow absorption.
But also consumption. So glucose, when it is consumed, it stimulates production of hormones that cause you to feel full. But fructose is not this way. Fiber, however, when consuming fiber, we become full very quickly. And also it's difficult to consume fiber.
For our bodies or for our mouths?
I mean for our hands. If I would like to eat, you know, foods that have, say, so for example, lactose. So if I'd like to consume milk, it is reasonably easy.
Well, it's a dangerous proposition for anyone around you, Dr. Tullis.
For me to consume milk.
Yes.
Again, because I was not evolved particularly to consume milk efficiently.
What substances would you suggest a human consumes before meditating?
I'm a very, very big fan of the fasting meditation.
I ask because I broke my raw food diet last week for a couple days, just to see what it was like to really understand the effects that the raw food diet had on me. And I realized that I slept so much deeper than normal. It was almost as if I was possessed by a sleeping demon. And I was unable to dream, and I was unable to reach out with my meditative mind. I was stuck in a sort of hallucinating, deep state. And yet I wonder, this is a different form of meditation. Perhaps. So in the end, I don't know what is best, this raw food diet or breaking it suddenly and specifically just for these deep, deep sleeps that may perhaps reach to a higher enlightenment, to a higher level, so to speak, a soul level.
Who can say? It certainly seems that consuming too much fiber can be detrimental to achieving good meditation. Because it makes me want or require voiding, which I find distracting from spiritual aims. Although it has been the sort of thing that has brought me back, that I begin to become too abstract and I forget that I am finite.
Yes, it's this wonderful feeling of infinity. And it's difficult to let go of, to return to our physical bodies, which are so limited.
Indeed. When I'm thinking of, you know, the bountiful universe, to remember that I'm a being that consumes carbon-based foods and I emit carbon-based waste, that it's such a simple, grounded earth thing that I am. It's an unusual juxtaposition there.
Well, perhaps the answer lies within horseradishes or incredibly hot peppers. Sometimes consuming incredibly hot peppers can shut off your other senses and you concentrate so hard on the pain on your tongue, the great feeling, the sensation of liveliness, and it is the opposite feeling that you wish for when meditating. Instead of concentrating on one physical thing and letting it consume you, you wish to be consumed by the world, and you wish to consume the world all in one, and to reach out with your inner senses rather than your tongue. If anyone listening would like to reach out with their tongue, our number is 617-253-8810, and there are two lines open for your calls.
The idea that fructose is a poison is terrifying to one of my portliness. Because for my entire life I have avoided alcohol. never really considering that these other things that I'm consuming could be quite as harmful.
Indeed, your love for jelly beans may now decline.
My love for them certainly will not, but my consumption of them must, if I wish to survive.
So you love something that will kill you?
Is it not so often the case?
So true, Dr. Jealous. What a deep, deep idea. Perhaps we love more the things that will harm us the most.
Indeed. I'm reminded of this every time I go to the beach and I remove my cloak and my shirt and thousands of moths fly into me.
And do their wings have a message?
I think this is the message, that beware for that which you find bright and illuminated may in fact lead to destruction. May not be particularly beneficial to strike, to approach too closely.
And yet the beach can wash away so many of your problems.
Indeed, indeed. It can. And once again, it's this amazing dichotomy. It's, you know, you reach out and such a spiritual thing, the ocean, the water, and then there you are standing like a beacon of reflection on the sand, rooted to the earth. Even if you venture yourself into the water, you must eventually return. Cannot remain.
Like all things, there is a frequency associated with that. The wave-like form. What goes out must come in again. And will again venture out eventually.
To venture out there. And what brings me back ordinarily from regarding the sky may not in this case bring me back. If I am swimming and I find myself in need of voiding, I can do so without returning. This is the analog of launching my excrement into the space.
Well, at first that idea may sound strange, but when you think of it, the entire ocean is one large sea of excrement that we consume within the bodies of fish. What a beautiful voice. He is saying, listen to me, to my message.
Indeed. This entire discussion, and especially this glorious anthem, reminds me of a poem by the ancient poet of the 19th century, Eliza Cook, who writes in her poem, Song of Seaweed. She writes, many a lip is gaping for a drink and madly calling for rain. And some hot brains are beginning to think of a messmate's opened vein. Which is really gross.
A messmate?
Precisely, you know, in the mess hall, which is where a number of soldiers or seafarers would, you know, eat. If people were lost at sea, they would have no source of water, which is a great irony. And you have this image of men standing on the poop and with their mouths open towards the heavens and praying that it will rain into their mouths, while one or two apparently thinks of drinking, you know, his friend's blood, which I don't actually think would be very thirst-quenching or particularly nutritious.
Especially considering that the others must also be very much dehydrated.
Precisely, so it would be said of the ordinary free-flowing cherry soda, it would be more of a cherry syrup. And of course not cherry-flavored.
Perhaps iron-flavored.
But simply cherry-colored.
Hopefully. I was thinking, Dr. Jalas, how incredibly exotic our world must look to extraterrestrials. To visitors from other planets and other planes. When they gaze upon the deer and the tiger, the lowly dung beetle, the tomato plant.
There are so many ironies about the Earth. I was recently asked by a person who almost walks the Earth as though he were an alien. He said to me, "Ya Jalas, Ya Dr. Jalas," he said, "I saw a man make a hole, puncture a piece of paper, and then indicate by a line where the hole was made." And he said, "I saw an entire room full of these people performing this and other tasks. The other tasks, fine, they confused me, but I could not imagine a circumstance under which it would be required that one would puncture a paper and then draw a line to indicate the location of the hole." I realized after hours of discussion that this room full of people was actually a geometry lesson, and he was referring to the compass.
Really interesting how many different ways these situations can be taken, how many different perceptions can be made from something so simple as a compass, indeed something so simple as a bathtub. I once had a friend who speculated that a bathtub was so foreign that it may appear to future archaeologists as a large pot in which to cook humans into a lovely broth. With a cold tap for rinsing the human from impurities and a warm tap for the boiling.
Can you imagine the profound impact that a desert planet resident would have upon coming to Earth and witnessing a lake or an ocean? It must be like a starving man who goes to a country where fruit grows on trees and is widely abundant. It's unusual.
It's so sad that it is unusual. In this day and age where we have ripped down all of the fruit-bearing trees and replaced them with cold stones. Cold, unresonating stones. The shimmering waving of the trees, the leaves dancing in the sunlight.
If you would like to shimmer in our sunlight, the call-in number is 617-253-8810. You could call in. Or simply allow us to continue meditating on
pistachios.
other words that begin with the letter B.
Pistachios are a lovely green color. They're very nutritious. It's amazing that this world has evolved so that all of us can attain our nourishment from it and bring back to it more nourishment.
Did I give out the call-in number?
I believe you did.
Well, I'm inclined for a moment to read in a few more of the poems that our listeners have sent us. If you would like to send us any poetry, we would love to read it over the air, or, you know, if the subject matter is apropos. The email address we have is humans@wmbr.org, and our hosts would simply love.
Here's a poem from Matthew Green, who sent this in. And it is about the spleen. I always choose the plainest food to mend viscidity of blood. Hail, water gruel, healing power of easy access to the poor. Thy help love's confessors implore, and doctors secretly adore. To thee I fly, by thee dilute, through veins my blood doth quicker shoot, and by swift currents throws off clean prolific particles of spleen. Such a beautiful poem about one's spleen.
And Matthew there, I mean, beautiful idea. I mean, once again, a person who was inspired to write based on the beautiful, symmetries and chemistries of the human body.
I believe it was Alexander Pope who remarked upon this poem and said that its originality was just amazing.
It's truly so. Should we have another poem? What do you say, Aurora?
As always, the flow of conversation runs over us. And I welcome that.
Here's a really amazing ancient poem by the great William McGonagall, who writes, "Alas, Sir John Ogilvy is dead, aged 87. But I hope his soul is now in heaven. For he was a generous-hearted gentleman, I am sure, and in particular, very kind unto the poor." There are several other stanzas. Let's read the final one. "He was a public benefactor in many ways, especially in erecting an asylum for imbecile children to spend their days. Then he handed the institution over as a free gift and a boon to the people of Dundee. Thanks there to Sir John Ogilvy and, of course, to William McGonagall for commemorating him and his wonderful gift to the people of Dundee and the imbecile children that live there.
And it's amazing how immortalizing such a tribute can be. I'm sure there would be very few who remember the legacy if it were not for the author.
I think that's certainly the case. What is this that we are listening to there, Aurora?
This is a new collection of Eversound Expressions. And the track we're listening to, I believe, is the first one.
Let's bring in a voice to join in with us this fine evening. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Welcome to the air.
How are you?
We're well, caller. How are you?
I'm having a really terrible day.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What ails you?
Well, it's just one of those days. I work in a library, you know, at one of the universities around the area.
Mm-hmm.
And these students, my God, they're driving me nuts. They're just monsters.
What do the students do?
They bring back books
mm-hmm.
with, like, torn pages and crumbs of, you know, pizza, candy and whatnot.
So just
these
absolute disregard for the
written word.
And also for the many other patrons of the library.
Right.
And is there a penalty for, you know, desecrating the books, the volumes?
I'm going to think a really good one up, but not at this time, no. What do you think I should do to these students?
I think at least it would be worth considering revoking their borrowing privileges. Let's bring a second voice in with us.
And perhaps they
caller.
Can help with this problem.
Caller 2, marhaban.
Hi.
Welcome, caller.
Thank you. Caller, have you thought about corporal punishment?
That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Possibly even capital punishment, but I just came in from Singapore, and there's absolutely no crime, not a single thief in the entire city. And it's because if you try to thief something, you get your hand thiefed off.
Hmm. And would the second caller be so kind as to step away from their radio?
No. Screw you and your rules.
Oh.
Go to H.
Caller.
Well, perhaps corporal punishment is going a little too far, but perhaps you should reach out with your mind and your mouth and say, shame on you, borrower. Shame. Shame for your inability to not read with greasy fingers.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, and, you know, so there are callers, there are patrons who habitually will simply commit such crimes. Let's bring in a voice, a third voice, perhaps, who can help us with this. Caller, welcome.
Hey, well, these books, if you're conditioned to eat, you're probably conditioned to wash your hands. And the safe keeps for these books.
I think the caller has an excellent point. So, caller, are you suggesting...
Or maybe they're putting the food on the paper and then eating the paper with the food. I mean... eating, like, they use the food, they wrap the pages up.
So, caller, am I understanding
like
correctly that you are suggesting that the librarian poisoned the pages of the book so that, you know, with a laxative, for example, so that anyone who eats while reading will have violent gastronomic consequences?
No, I don't know.
Because I think that's actually a feasible option.
Yeah, there's no proof that you physically harm these people, and they would learn a Pavlovian response, perhaps.
Precisely, it would be unconscious, but gradually the entire population would regard it as extremely unwise to eat while reading, or, you know, at least to be unhygienic in that regard.
Or while swimming.
So I think I'm getting some good ideas, thank you. I think I'm going to petition a new policy where whatever kind of food or drink I find on a book is going to be done unto you, dear student. I think that's what I will write up. So if there's
that's
like,
wonderful.
You know...
Is it really evil there is? Is that a joke? Was that a joke? Was that one of those jokes?
Well, I've certainly seen coffee stains and
bodily fluids. Yes.
Well, crumb from scone in books and actually hair, a lot of hair in books.
And dead spiders.
So I'm allowed to do whatever I want. Hey, can you, wait, no. Can you eat too much fiber in a day? Is the food pyramid fiber thing cool?
I think that it is... possible technically to gorge oneself on fiber.
I must admit this has happened to me before and it was very unpleasant.
But in practice you evolve to emit certain hormones when you consume fiber that will tell your brain, okay, enough fiber. You know, it is not exactly necessary to eat an entire tree. You know?
It is possible to ignore one's mind, and in this circumstance, I ate over 3 pounds of carrot sticks in one day.
Yeah, I think in this case, pain really should be your guide.
Yes, pain was my guide, and at the same time, I was trying to induce pain to see my limits, and my body voided everything instantly.
Hmm. And yet, as we've discussed previously, it is possible to accumulate fiber in the intestine in the form of a bezoar, which can be very harmful, very painful, must be removed surgically.
But magical, can it not be?
Well, there are rumors of various spiritual benefits or effects that the bezoar possesses, but I'm not a believer.
So, caller, librarian caller, your suggestion is that if pizza grease is on the page, then pizza grease will be rubbed all over the student.
That's right. I think I'll have to be a little bit flexible. Like, I won't mind if students like to lick the pages of books, but if, you know, they're taking their food and smeared it on there, yeah, I'll have to punish them for that.
Well, caller, I think there may be a flaw because there are certain substances that should be rubbed on people but not on books. For example, a lotion in a book would, I think, be harmful but perhaps beneficial.
Well, perhaps you could, in that case, rub lotion in the person's eye.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Eye lotion. I'm not sure what effect that would have, but it does indeed strike me as probably a negative one. So perhaps that should be the policy, that because you have forced others to see this substance on the book, to see through it in order to read the words on the page, they must be forced now to see through this substance in life. So perhaps, in fact, one could go so far as to rub pizza grease on a person's eye or on their glasses, to force them to wear pizza grease glasses.
Yes, I love it.
This sounds like such a wonderful solution.
And would the punishment be interminable, or would it have some? Would there be a finite length to the duration?
Well, I suppose for as long as the substance is still on the book, correct?
So, I mean,
that may build up to be too much work for you, caller.
Well, I'll have to monitor the pizza sauce on the book and see how long it takes to decompose.
So I think in practice what may have to happen is that the patron will be forced to replace the item, because I'm not sure that pizza grease ever really dissolves.
Or coffee stains.
That's what I'm hoping.
It seems a bit cruel, caller, I have to admit. No, my initial impression was that you said that the similar punishment, like the that if someone dropped pizza onto a book, that they would be baked into a pizza.
That also seems a little cruel.
It did seem cruel. I was very confused. I'm not sure which library would carry out such punishments. A library inside a very...
Well, and it brings to mind how much we do actually lack freedom in this country. Could one really be allowed to rub pizza grease in another's eyes without facing some horrible consequences?
Perhaps criminal penalties. Which books, caller? Was it just in general this is happening, or are there particular genres that these violators prefer? I think we may have lost our caller. Alas.
Such dulcet tones.
Well, if anyone would like to call in, the number is 617-253-8810, and we just have a few minutes. Caller, welcome.
I'm going to try this. It's my one joke from earlier. Hold on. That's my joke.
Okay. Thank you for that, Robert. Let's bring another voice in as well. Caller, welcome.
Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Oh my God. Hey, what's going on?
Well, not a lot, caller. Can I beg you, please, to turn down the radio or to step away from it?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. So what are we talking about today?
Well, caller, recently the issue of corporal punishment for violators of certain library laws was floated by, and it was concluded that those who spilt pizza on the words of a book should have pizza smeared in their eye.
Oh, wow.
It's really a proportional response, I feel.
So, caller, what is the conversation in your life at the moment?
Well, I'm going to talk about one thing. I hope you don't get offended. You sound very beautiful.
Well, thank you, caller.
You have a beautiful voice.
And what of my voice, caller?
Your voice is... I could have you read me a bedtime story. Like, it's so calming and just, like, relaxing.
Thank you. Thank you so much, caller. We also very much embrace and enjoy your voice.
Really?
Yes, we certainly do. We welcome.
This is like a good radio voice, maybe?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. We should do a show together.
We are doing a show together.
I'm flabbergasted. That just blew my mind. We really are doing a show together.
Indeed. And I think we here at Music for Humans are always, you know, in the business of mind-blowing.
Yeah. Exactly.
And doing shows with the entire world.
Let's bring another voice from the world in.
This goes out to Matt and Jeff.
Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Hey, Matt. Hi,
this is Adam.
Welcome, Adam and Matt.
Do you think I have a good radio voice, too?
No, he doesn't have a good radio voice. Say no.
I think everyone has a wonderful voice in their own right.
I disagree. I think, but I like your voices, both corners.
Oh, thank you,
Adam. Like we should do a radio show together.
We are.
Oh wow. Oh wow.
You callers have just blown my mind.
Hello.
Yes, caller.
My name is Samuel.
I'm sorry?
You would like some whales?
Whale.
I believe he wishes for the whale music.
The whale? I'll indicate to our sound engineer that we would like whales.
And for those of you who do not know, Dr. Charles is currently signing one palm above the other with his thumbs in rotating motions.
Alright, well, I'm about to see a movie, but back.
Thank you so much, caller, for being with
Namaste.
Us. Let's bring one final voice in, see if we can squeeze it in these final minutes. Caller, welcome. Caller? Have we lost all of our callers simultaneously? I believe we may have done so.
Ah, the negative vibrations.
Indeed. But even negative vibrations are vibrations, and we welcome them.
Juxtaposed with the right vibrations.
So well put.
And this music is so gleeful.
Indeed. And here we are again in these final minutes, contemplating our joy, and not really in spreading our beliefs like a fountain, but really just all of us being a garden hose and spraying each other with our beliefs. And it's so wonderful to be sprayed by the beliefs of Boston. I really enjoy hearing from everyone.
So well put, Dr. Jalas. And such a gleeful image as well, particularly in the summertime.
I'm sure everyone will forgive me for leaving my shirt on, not for your sakes alone, but for the poor moth who mistakes me for the sun.
And for the butterflies who mistake you for the flower.
Indeed, indeed. And how many times I have been mistakenly pollinated, and the poor insects that have lost their lives just flying into me. But to our wonderful listeners out there in Boston, thanks to Aurora here.
Thank you so much for having me. Namaste to all.
Thank you, Aurora. And thanks to our many callers this evening for joining us and for spraying us with their beliefs. I am Dr. Jalas Sakran here on Music for Human, which is New Age talk radio with an emphasis on you, here on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM every Friday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned now for Acts Beyond Words. Ma'a salama.
Safety.
Number one,
cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two,
look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three,
cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four,
cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
kumukulan buah kayu Bengkulu. Imawat sa pangiman bukiblat nga hiniku.